We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and a happy Thanksgiving coming up tomorrow. It is also Bucket Week. We are talking about the monstrous game between IU and Purdue. It's Bucket Week. This one means a little bit more for IU. They have a bowl berth on the line. This is, you know, when you talk at the beginning of the season, this is where you want to be. This, you want to be playing Purdue for a bowl berth. Now, it would have been nice to have 6 wins already, but you can't complain about this. We're going to have our co-host TJ Inman is joining us from Indianapolis. TJ, welcome back to the show, and greetings from New York City.
Yeah, it's always great to be on. It's a very important week, as we'll talk about. The stakes as far as IU football goes don't get a whole lot higher than what we're playing for Saturday. It's not very often that Indiana's in a position to put themselves into a bowl game, and it's not very often that Indiana is in a position to win the bucket for a third straight time. So it's a crucial game. I know that nationally this is going to be a blip on the radar, if even that. But for those of us that care about these two programs, this is a really big week.
Yeah, it's a tremendous week. As you said, IU going for a bowl game, Purdue looking to play spoiler. So we'll see. They have not won. IU has not won 3 straight buckets since 1947 when they went on a 4-game win streak. And, the last time they traveled up to Purdue for a bowl game, for a bucket game with a bowl on the line was 2006. And that game ended poorly. But they did come back the next year and get revenge on the Boilermakers and to go 7-5 in 2007. TJ, I also want to point out that if there are IU fans who are thinking of going up to Purdue, I'm looking at StubHub now. There are 435 tickets available, and they start at $20. So it's a pretty cheap date, so to speak. And we'll see how many IU fans make the trip up there. I do believe that there will be plenty of IU fans out there, though it is not the cheapest game. The cheapest game is, surprisingly enough, Michigan State, Penn State at $16. But, TJ, you put out your primer today. Yeah, that's weird, right?
Yeah, that's very odd.
The weather's supposed to be better than it is at than West Lafayette, so... But teach their own. I don't know what they're doing up in East Lansing. But, TJ, you put out your primer this morning. Some very good stuff. What makes you nervous about Purdue, aside from going up there and not having much luck?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that makes you most nervous is that there are very real stakes for this game. And it's just, as an IU football fan, that's not something that you are used to dealing with. You're in a position where, and I mean, you know, to be clear, what the Indiana fans feel and what I feel as an Indiana fan is irrelevant to the game itself. But you know, you're in a position where the team you're cheering for is favored against the rival on the road, and that's a strange position to be in. It's not one that I'm used to by any means. And so that's what probably makes me most nervous, is that we go into this game kind of expecting an Indiana victory. I do not expect it to be easy. I do not expect it to be a blowout. But I'd be lying if I sat here and you know, told our listeners that I expect anything other than IU to win and get to a sixth victory. I've kind of expected six wins the entire season, and this has played out somewhat like I thought it would. Some of the results have been closer than expected or different than expected, but I think ultimately this is not a shock to have Indiana in this position, but it is a surprise to see, without knowing anything other than just the history of this matchup, it's a big surprise to see IU as a touchdown favorite in Ross-Ade Stadium. So that's probably what makes me most nervous, but the strictly on field, you know, Purdue, the most noteworthy thing is that Purdue is going to be starting Austin Appleby at quarterback. David Blau took a very, very hard hit from an Iowa defender last week. He left the game. Austin Appleby came in and actually played quite well. He was 23 of 40, 259 yards and a touchdown. I don't think that it makes a huge difference in terms of the outlook for this game. I was kind of surprised that Purdue switched to David Blau as quickly as they did. Appleby was the starter at the beginning of the season. For those that do not follow Purdue real closely, I don't blame you. And here I've got his stats. We won't go through these and bore anybody with numbers, but he'll get Marshall. He threw for 270, had a touchdown. But here's the critical thing that got Appleby into trouble. He had four interceptions. Two of those were returned for touchdowns. That's why Purdue lost that game. Against Indiana State, 289, four touchdowns. Also had 50 rushing yards. You know, that's FCS team. You can discount those stats. But he didn't have any turnovers. It was a good day for him. Virginia Tech, 9 for 28, 110 yards, two picks. So that lost him the starting position. They went to David Blau against Bowling Green that next week and stuck with Blau until he was injured. I think that what I saw between the two, Appleby, I think, is less accurate than David Blau is, less consistent. He's only 55% on the season, where Blau is up above 60 as far as completion percentage goes. Blau, I think, is a more dangerous runner, although, you know, neither would be considered incredibly mobile. They both can move around some. I think you will see occasional zone read books from Purdue or just straight quarterback runs where they are attempting to get maybe on third and short, try to get some pick up some first downs, or maybe you'll see the quarterback flushed out of the pocket. Appleby's capable of picking up, you know, 5-6 yards. I don't think he has a run longer than 8 on the season, or maybe it's 12. He's not incredibly explosive with his legs, whereas Blau has made some 30-plus-yard runs. I think that they're just about equal in terms of arm strength, and I think Appleby is very capable of stretching the field. I think that the turnovers are something to watch for, but Indiana's defense really hasn't been able to take the ball away from their opponent very often here recently, so maybe turnovers aren't going to be a concern for Purdue. I know Maryland ended up with a few, but those were turnovers on downs, and it wasn't a case where Indiana was able to force their quarterback, even though, you know, Cockrell and Rowe both struggled with accuracy. They didn't get any picks. So I think that the completion percentage is something to watch for. Kind of my target number is what I'm looking for. I think if Indiana can keep Appleby under 300 yards of, you know, meaningful yards, I think that could be considered okay. I think anything above that, you're getting into dangerous territory. And then completion percentage-wise, it's an arbitrary number, but I think you want to keep him at or, you know, very near his season average, so somewhere around 55-60%, keep him at or below that. And I think you'll feel pretty good about what you've done. Running-wise, I think Markell Jones is a little bit scary. You know, he's Mr. Football in 2014. He's from Columbus East High School. He's a player that the Indiana coaches know a lot about. he's a very good running back. He's 5'9", not a real big guy, but he's well built. He runs very hard. He's been kind of a rare bright spot for Purdue this season.
Yeah, he's a guy who makes me nervous. TJ is both him and DJ Knox in the run game. So Markell Jones is very, very good.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about what you thought. Brandon Ross against Maryland, Brandon Ross was kind of the first back that has really had much success, much consistent success. You know, some guys, Ezekiel Elliott, springs to mind as a guy that had a few big runs. But really, Brandon Ross was the first running back that had kind of some consistent success against Indiana's defense. Do you think that's a cause for concern as we head into a game against Markell Jones and DJ Knox, in which Purdue will undoubtedly attempt to, kind of ground the ball, keep the ball away from Indiana's offense? I'm sure that'll be their game plan. So are you concerned about the run defense, or do you think it was kind of a one-week fluke?
I'm a little concerned about the run defense, although it might have been a one-week fluke. Maryland does run that read option out of a traditional option formation, I think. It's not quite Navy, but they had, guys running across the line of scrimmage, and it was one of the more tougher runs to defend. And, the safety help wasn't there. The guys would crash, and he'd run right through the line. I do think Purdue is more of a traditional run team. They'll run it out of, either the pistol or shotgun or from under center. But they're not an option team, and the option teams are what makes me nervous. But you're right, Markell Jones, a smaller back. I hope that they could figure it out and stop him. That's, if Markell Jones breaks a couple big runs like Brandon Ross did last week, you can look out. Maybe we'll, Purdue will be in it. The crowd that's there supporting Purdue will get into it. I don't know numbers or anything like that in terms of percentages of fans who will be there. I know a lot of IU fans are looking to make the trip. So we'll see, if they could stop the run game, I think making Appleby throw, I know it was last year, but he was not good in the bucket game last year. But this year's different. D'Angelo Yancey is having a bounce back year. He looked very good as a freshman in 2013. They have some other receivers. Danny Anthrop is back and healthy. So they really are a balanced offense to the point of they can both pass it and run it. Now, they are 2-9. And they are 1-6 in the Big Ten. So clearly they're not doing everything great at the same time. Their one Big Ten win was against Nebraska. It was against Nebraska's backup quarterback. There were five turnovers. A lot of them gave the ball to Purdue inside of Nebraska, deep inside Nebraska territory. So, we'll see. I am worried about the run game. It's I wouldn't say keeping me up at night because I'm not game planning against it, but it's something that IU fans must be aware of.
Yeah, I think the balance is something that you talk about. Like you said, they're clearly not a good football team. However, they don't really have one glaring thing that you can say they are absolutely, mind-bogglingly awful at this one thing. Like Maryland, you could say they cannot pass the ball.
At least on offense, their run defense is atrocious.
Right. On offense, you can't say that they only have one dimension. They do have a two dimensions. Neither dimension is great, but neither dimension is horrible either. I think that one thing that I've noticed when I watch them, and I know that their fans kind of echo this sentiment, they don't really have an identity on offense. I think Indiana very much does have an identity. They are, what you would consider a explosive team that plays an up-tempo offense that is very capable of beating you through the air or on the ground. I think for those to pay attention, they would know that the identity of Indiana is that the offensive line is able to dictate the game for them. Purdue does not really have an identity on offense. I know that a lot of their fans are ready to kind of send their offensive coordinator, John Shoup, into the sun as early as possible. They're not a big fan of what they call the Shoup fence, which is predictable play calling, and they have a myriad of complaints against him. But I do think the one thing that they do fairly well is that they maintain some semblance of balance. D'Angelo Yancey, you mentioned him. Yeah, he struggled with drops in 2014. He's the leading receiver in terms of targets. He has 84 targets. Second on the team with catches, 41. So that's not a very good percentage, you know, below 50% as far as targets to catches. But leads the team in receiving yards, 15.6 yards per catch. So I think that what they're going to attempt to do is establish the run with Jones and then Knox as a change of pace back. He's I don't know what height DJ Knox is, but he is not tall. The cliche that you would see used is, you know, a bowling ball once he gets moving. He's just in terms of body
shape.
DJ
Knox
is 5'7".
DJ Knox is 5'7", 197. Markell Jones, he makes Markell Jones look like a giant at 5'11", 207 pounds.
I'm a short fella, so I am able to say he is a short fella. However, he is much, much larger and stronger than I am. When I watch DJ Knox, he runs incredibly hard. It looks like he's doing quite a bit of work, but he has just 3.6 yards to carry. I don't know if that's – he's not all that quick. I don't know if it's – he struggles to read the holes. I don't know if it's – they don't generate holes well enough for him. I don't think the offensive line is very good at run blocking. Markell Jones leads that team in rushing. I think another thing IU has to be careful of, he's also capable of taking screen passes and turning them into some big plays. He has 227 receiving yards on the year. Not a huge number, but he's able to make some plays. I think they'll take some deep shots off the play action with Yancey and look for Dominique Young. He has had his best two games of his career in the past 2 weeks. Had over 100 yards 2 weeks ago, had 52 yards last week. And the catches that he does make tend to be of the longer variety, just kind of streaks down the sideline, which Indiana's defense, we are well aware, the secondary can be had. So I think that that's what they'll try to do, establish the run, throw play action over the top. Danny Anthrop is going to be the guy they go to on third down more often than not with the quick slants. Anthrop, I think, is their most sure-handed receiver. But he has not had a great season. I kind of expected him to be more effective than he has been this season. He leads the team in catches, but he's averaging like 7 yards a catch or something like that. Balanced offense, they're not great at either thing. They're not terrible at either thing. But I think Indiana's goal should be, you know, minimize the damage that Jones and Knox are able to do. You're not going to totally shut them down, but minimize the damage that they're able to do. Don't allow the big runs like we saw against Brandon Ross. You know, get back to what we saw at the earlier part of the Big Ten season, or even just going back to Michigan. Michigan was unable to run the ball with the exception of Jake Rudock. So, you know, just eliminate that Maryland game from your mind if you're the run defense. Get back to playing how you were. Make Purdue more or less one-dimensional. They're going to try to stick with the run, but make them as one-dimensional as you can and try to force some accurate throws, not just big plays, because I think that if you force this Purdue defense to have to move down the field, sooner or later I think they're going to make a mistake, whether it's a penalty, a drop ball, a really inaccurate pass, maybe Indiana can get some pressure. I think that if Indiana can prevent Purdue from getting big plays, I don't think the Purdue offense is going to be effective or disciplined enough to move down the field consistently on this IU defense. which is not,
yeah,
I'm not saying the defense is going to be amazing or anything, but I just think Purdue's shown enough propensity to make mistakes that if you can force them to make a lot of, smaller, medium plays and not give up the big plays, then eventually they're going to shoot themselves in the foot.
Yeah, and to go along that point, if you can hold them to field goal attempts, their field goal kicker is under 50% on the year. He's hit 5 of 11. He really hasn't. He hasn't hit any over 40 yards. His long is 34. So that's really, their field goal range really isn't, if you hold him out of the red zone, he's not good. If you're kicking a 39-yard field goal, that means you're probably at the 22 and snapping the ball back to the 29. So if you hold him outside of the 22, we'll see where it goes from there. It's shocking. I thought Griggs was a good kicker in the past, but he's missed from 44, 41, 33, 19, 32, and 43, and he missed two short ones. I'm sorry, he made the two short ones last week against Iowa, but he's missed the 19 and the 32, and then he didn't attempt a field goal in, it looks like, 4 or 5 straight games, Michigan State, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Illinois. We'll see where they go from there. It's, if you can hold them to field goal attempts, you only get 3 points, and he's hitting only 45.5% of his kicks. That's an area where IU clearly has an advantage with Griffin Oakes. He's been stellar all year. I think he's around 95% on field goals, or 90% and 95% on extra points. He's very, very good on kickoffs. So we'll see. Unless there's a stiff wind, I think they did an awesome job last week against Will Likely and Maryland. Like a really awesome job. I did hold my breath on that first kickoff when it was short. And Will Likely got to the outside. But, if it comes down to special teams, IU has a clear advantage on that. But you're right. It's trying to take one of those dimensions away from Purdue. If you stop the run, I think IU fans would be happy to see Appleby throw the ball a little bit more. The weather is, it's supposed to be weather. But the weather, it's now looking like it could rain on Saturday. So that will soften up the field, maybe have a slick ball and a slow track, which should play into the defense's hands, maybe. We'll see where it goes from there. But this is it's a rivalry game. You could throw records out the window. I know Purdue would love nothing more than to keep IU from that sixth win and bowl eligibility at home, and get what would be Darryl Hazel's biggest win at Purdue. I know Nebraska's a nice win, but to win the bucket back after 2 years of getting beat in Bloomington, that'd be Darryl Hazel's biggest win at Purdue.
You could build some momentum going to the offseason as well. I mean, you just think about the narrative that could come out of this game. Let's say that Purdue manages to pull off the upset, which it still feels weird for me to say that, and I don't entirely accurate, but let's say that Purdue could win this game on Saturday. If they do, you think about the narrative coming out of it is, look at Purdue. They're playing with momentum. They played Iowa tough. They played Northwestern tough, and then they beat Indiana. Maybe they're headed in the right direction. And then you've got, on the other side, you would have Indiana saying, yeah, they played a lot of top teams competitively, and they won their non-conference games, and they pounded Maryland. But when it came time to seal the deal, they came up short. And questions would really be asked, and it would be beyond frustrating to end the season on that note. So it's the narratives that could come out of the game if Purdue were able to get it done somehow would be very, very frustrating for me to have to follow, because I mean, we know what this team is capable of doing, and I think it, if they play as they're capable of on Saturday, then I feel like they should be able to come out of there with the win. One thing I did want to mention about Paul Griggs, you know, they lost confidence in him, or he lost confidence in himself, or both. It has changed their play calling some as they approach the red zone. Situations where you might expect to see a field goal attempted, just keep that in your mind on third down, and because they might be planning on going for it on fourth, and you might see, you know, on third and eight, maybe a running play instead of a passing play, or I don't think it's a matter of being aggressive. I just think it's a matter of they have no faith that they're going to make the field goal from, you know, outside of like 35 yards. So they are going to go for it on fourth down. They make up their minds of that on third down, and that changes your play calling. So keep that in mind as you're watching the game, if some of the third down play calls are kind of confusing. But, you're right about this being a rivalry game, throw the records out. That's something I know Purdue would love to do, is throw the record out, because theirs is pretty horrible. I think that one of the things that's most interesting to me is, as we move over to the other side of the ball, Indiana's running game against Purdue's running defense. I think that is, on paper, it's the largest advantage that IU has in this matchup.
Yeah,
Jordan Howard,
field goal kick.
Yeah, but that's true, aside from field goal kicking. Jordan Howard is – I haven't heard anything on
Jordan Howard.
I don't know if you want to talk about that.
Yeah, well, Wilson said on Monday he's been limited in practice. You know, I think he said he would have been able to come back into the Maryland game, but they didn't want to risk it. It is a knee injury. To his left knee, I believe. You know, we'll see. He's officially questionable. I would believe, not doubtful, not probable, just questionable. He may or may not play. If I had to make a prediction on him, I think he would get limited carries. It is the final game of the year. It is a rivalry game. I think he needs to prove, not only to himself, but to some of the NFL scouts who will be watching him probably, that he can play through a little injury. I don't know how major or minor the injury is, but he can, you know, give it a shot and give it a try, because he has missed now almost four games with injury, and that's a quarter of the season. Or a third of the season. So we'll see. What happens? I do think he would give it a shot if he. I do think he'll be on a pitch count, maybe between 12 and 15 runs. I think that's enough to do a little bit of damage. I think Devon Redding is good enough to run on this Purdue defense. Indiana's offensive line should have a field day. You know, if they're playing well, if they're playing like they did against Michigan, like they did in the second half. Only the second half, but from the second quarter on at Maryland, Indiana should have no problem running the ball with Mike Majette and Devine Redding. Now, Majette did not look 100% at Maryland. He just lacked that extra burst that he had shown earlier in the year. I did think he got robbed of a touchdown, but that's another conversation for another day on whether or not replay should be.
He left the game as well, right? I mean, he left.
I believe so, because it looked like in the second half they went all with either Andrew Wilson, A-Rod, and Devine in the second half there. So I don't think he was 100% coming in, and maybe they limited his carries. But you know, this week there's no classes. You get extra treatment for players for injuries. So. You know, maybe they give it a shot. Majette was not on kickoff return. So on the opening kickoff, when I didn't see him out there, that led me to believe that he was a little nicked up. They didn't want to expose him to extra hits. But this Indiana running game should be able to have their way with the Purdue defense that's missing Juwan Bentley. and who has struggled against the run. They got torched by Minnesota, and they got torched by Illinois. Those are the two games that stand out in the run game. Now, as far as the passing game goes, Nate Sudfeld, I thought, was as good as I've seen him against Maryland. He was putting the ball in places where his receivers can make the catch and make a run after the catch. He told us on Monday that it's his receivers did the hard job. He just threw him the ball. So, Damon Graham has been not benched, but he's been getting less playing time in favor of Andre Booker at a beautiful catch on that 59-yard touchdown. I think, having some guy who can stretch the field deep like Booker does help that offense so much better. It opens up down the middle of the field for Simi Cobbs to make some moves. While Simi's a great receiver, he's not going to stretch the field, like Booker. He can do a 20-yard route, make a guy miss, and get another 10 to 15 yards. Mitchell Page has become a very reliable receiver. So, Purdue has, I believe, 7 interceptions. You can correct me if I'm wrong. So they do force some turnovers. They actually have 12 this year. But between Anthony Brown and Frankie Williams, they have 7. So, Nate Sudfeld, I don't want to say has to be careful, but he has to be aware. They will pick off a few passes, and turnovers change every game. So, we'll see. I think as long as the weather is dry, Nate Sudfeld should be good to go performance-wise. Now, what's interesting, TJ, is that he's thrown one career pass against Purdue. In 2013, I think he was 1 for 1 for 18 yards. That was Trey's big game. Obviously, he missed the 2012 game with an injury, and he missed the 2014 game with an injury. So this is really his first taste of the Bucket rivalry as a full-time starter. So, he's got to keep his emotions in check. Calm down. If you start overthrowing the ball, that's when turnovers happen. We saw it, maybe a little early in the year when he was overthrowing guys and was just a little bit off. And that's something that fans should keep an eye on, too, is how Nate Sudfeld, who's been even keeled most of the year, he might have been a little fired up coming out against Southern Illinois, which you can't blame him. He hadn't played in 8 months or 9 months, and he was rearing up to go. But this is his final regular season game. As a senior, he wants to leave his mark and his legacy here. He's not going to say that, to us in the press or to fans, but this is, his legacy. He is now the all-time leader in touchdown passes for IU. His legacy is getting this team to a bowl game. Now, all these seniors' legacy is that, because these are the guys who helped get to this point. And a lot like 2007, this is the next step. This is, you want to be remembered with some of the better IU teams. This is a game you have to win. Now you can back into a bowl game, probably a 5-7. I haven't heard anything that they're going to take 5-7 teams yet, but from the looks of it, there are a lot of empty vacancies in the bowl games to be filled. So, keeping his emotions in check is going to be huge.
Yes, I 100% agree about the way that Nate Sudfeld played last week. I thought he was very, very accurate in his placement of the ball. You were right, he's putting it last week. He put it in the place where his receiver could make a play on the ball, nobody else could. And then once they're able to make that catch, they were able to break one tackle, or not even break a tackle, but he hit him in a place where they were moving upfield. So I was really, really pleased with the way he played last week. And what was so impressive was you fall down 21-3, your best offensive player, or at least so far this season, Jordan Howard had been the, kind of the most dominant offensive force that you had. He's on the bench with the knee injury. And it really looked like things were unraveling. And Nate Sudfeld just took control. He stepped up. They didn't panic. And they marched right down, scored. It's 21-10. and then he hits Andre Booker for a big touchdown. And before you know it, Indiana's back ahead. And a large part of that is the way that Sudfeld played. He threw for almost 400 yards, had 5 total touchdowns. It was a dominant performance that that he was rightfully rewarded for. And it puts him in a position now this week where you have a chance to play for a bowl game. You're right about the legacy. You know, this is I'm not going to say, oh, if they lose this game, Nate Sudfeld gets remembered as, you know, just another gunslinger at IU. I don't know about that. I have no clue how he's going to be remembered, but I know that I will definitely remember Nate Sudfeld as a guy that helped get this program to a bowl game if they get there. Like, that's not something that Indiana football fans are going to forget, because it is so rare for this program to be in that position. So, and he's obviously played a huge part in it. Just looking at the Purdue defense overall, they're 67th in the S&P Plus rankings. It's not bad. If you kind of look at the competition they're playing against, you know, they're primarily playing Big Ten West opponents that do not have great offenses for the most part. And then, you know, their run defense, they got, 174 yards last week by Iowa, 250 by Northwestern before that, 382 by Illinois, which is just a total outlier for Illinois' season. They have not been able to run the ball that even close to that well against anyone else. And then Minnesota, 326. Again, Minnesota hasn't run the ball that well against anybody else. So the opportunity is going to be there, like you said, for the offensive line to have a field day. I think it's going to be really, really critical for them to set the tone very, very early. And by them, I mean the Hoosiers. You cannot dig yourself a 21-3 hole again. Last week they were able to dig out of it very, very quickly, and that was impressive. But you cannot put yourself in that position again. So setting the tone early is going to be important. You know, they don't need to jump out to some big lead, although that would be extremely nice. Boyd falling behind and relying on a good third quarter, as they have so often this season, played really well in the third quarter. They just can't put themselves into position to rely on that with so much on the line.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It's a whole different animal if you fall behind in this game. The Purdue fans who are going to be there will be loud. There's going to be more atmosphere at this game than there was at Maryland. Heck, there was more atmosphere on the moon than there was at Maryland last week. So. It was like walking into a ghost town, walking up to the stadium at Maryland. So, you know, Indiana's got to be, you know, you got to bring your own energy a little bit. You got to trust the system, and you cannot fall behind. If, you know, I was talking to Matt Weaver earlier this week, and we were talking about what does IU do if you win the toss? A lot of times you see coaches defer. I think we agreed that IU should take the ball on offense, move it down and score a touchdown, which is where you saw the Maryland game change. Was IU got the ball, they went down the field fairly easily, and then settled for three. And that kind of changed the tone of the game, where if they scored a touchdown there, maybe they don't fall behind 21-3 or 21-7. But, you know, if you go down and, you know, Purdue's, you know, I've said they've kind of quit a little bit in the past, which they have, but this year seems like this team has bought in a little bit more. They'll play hard to the end. So, you know, going down, getting that first touchdown, and then getting a stop on defense is going to be huge. Then you get all the momentum, the IU fans who are going to make the trip up or will be into it, and, you know, the Purdue fans, we've seen it a lot at IU, are going to have the, here we go again, mentality maybe.
Yeah, I think the mindset of both fan bases is pretty similar at this point. Purdue was in a different spot, you know, a decade ago, but I think at this point, the mindset of both fan bases is, you know, it's pretty fragile. I'm not going to speak for everyone, but I know for myself, it's kind of a, more often than not, it's kind of a sense of, when is something going to go wrong? When is that other shoe going to drop? And I guess you could say it's a fatalist mindset. You know, I don't go into every IU game thinking IU's going to lose. That's not what I'm saying. But, you know, you go in with a sense of, during the course of a game, kind of plays like a, you know, a 3rd and 12 where IU is playing well, that, you know, you're watching the play like, how is the defense going to let up a play here? Like, what wrong is going to happen? And you're surprised.
Yeah,
when
which
it's
is,
incomplete.
You know, everybody, yeah, like, TJ, you're exactly right in that mentality. You saw it last week on Twitter. I know you're not a big tweeter, but, you know, looking at Twitter when they were down 21-3, people are like, here we go again. You saw these, you saw the fire Wilson, this program's guard dumpster fire. Get rid of everybody, and then all of a sudden it all disappeared when they came back. So, you know, it's definitely there. It's the here we go again mentality, and you're right. On 3rd and 20, you're thinking, great, they're going to get 19 and a half yards. They'll spot the ball a little bit better for them, and it'll be a first down.
Sure. Right.
Which is, you know, hopefully doesn't get in the players' heads either. And you're right, it is the battle of the uh-ohs for both fan bases.
You're right. Did both fan bases kind of feel that way. So, you know, if you can put that nervous energy into the stadium first, I don't know how much of an impact it has, but I know that momentum is a very real thing, that if you get it going positively forward, you can build on it. I think it's going to be important in a rivalry game to, number one, manage the emotions either way. I mean, you can't get too high or too low with anything that happens in it. You know, like you said with Sudfeld earlier in the season, maybe being a little bit too amped up, overthrowing the ball a little bit, sailing receivers. You know, you can't do that, so you can't be too high, but you also can't panic. We saw that last week. IU did not panic when they fell behind. A lot of the fans did. I was really, really frustrated with the way they started that game, just because the one constant had been, shutting down or at least minimizing running backs. And, you know, we knew that Maryland couldn't throw the ball, and, you know, they break off two big runs in the first quarter. And I was just so frustrated by that, because it seemed like it would be a season where it just doesn't click. Like, everything doesn't click all at once.
And
you know, they were able to rebound as a team. They were able to stay together, and very quickly put themselves back into a, you know, positive position. It wasn't like they, you know, slowly came back. No, they came back very, very quickly, showed they could do it, but you can't make a habit of it. And I think we're on the same page there, that this, it's not going to make or break this game, like who scores first. But if one team can get off to a very good start, that positive momentum, positive energy, whatever you want to call it, can really snowball in a game like this.
Yeah, and it's not really who scores first. It's almost who scores second, TJ. Like in hockey, it's always that second goal that's important. It's whether you start out at 2-0 or it's 1-1, or if it's, you know, 10-0 or 7-7 or 7-3 or 14-0. So, I mean, it's a big difference between 14-0 and 7-3 to start off that game. And maybe at 14-0, one team starts to waver a little bit. But let's get into some of the other games. There are other games around the Big Ten, some big ones as well. You know, but the bucket game is very important. This is probably the biggest bucket game since 07. It is. There's no question about that. So, you know, we'll see. I'm excited. I think the fan base is excited and fired up. I hate the fact that it's on Thanksgiving weekend. I wish the students would be there. You know, I think it takes a little air out of the balloon in terms of atmosphere. Plus, you know, these are two schools that are struggling to get students in the seats. And this rivalry goes back to 1925. It's part of college football. That's are these trophy games. And maybe the students who are not there, who are home with their families, don't really get the taste of that. And that keeps them, you know, from going to games in the future. So I really wish that they would move this game. It should always be at the end of the season, but move the end of the season up a week. So students are on campus. There's an atmosphere. And students from both schools appreciate the rivalry as much as some of us who have, you know, grown up with it in Indiana or were lucky enough to go to school at one of these schools while they were playing the week before Thanksgiving, you know, the weekend before you went home, and it was on campus, and it was a big deal.
Yes, I don't disagree with any of that. It will affect, still affect Purdue's turnout more, obviously, than the home team this week. But yeah, moving forward, that's something that I think does need to be considered or taken into consideration. I know the reasoning behind it is you don't want to have that layoff for the, you know, college football playoff considerations. You don't want to have, you know, your teams not getting a chance to impress the committee on one of the last weekends of the season. I get that part of it. You don't want to have the layoff before the title game. I get that part of it, but there are ways around that for sure.
Yeah, and especially now that you do have a Big Ten title game, you know, and maybe in order to get a better product or better game, you have a week off and you play that game, you know, you push the season up instead of having two bye weeks. I mean, they started the season a week later this year. Maybe you push it back to August, that last weekend in August, and, you know, move it up to where, you know, the season does end the weekend before Thanksgiving, like it should. Anyway, TJ, quickly going around the Big Ten. We have a Big Ten game on a Friday. It's the yep. Heroes game, I believe. They had a whole big
Heroes
thing
trophy.
On Big Ten Network today. So I think it's the Freedom Trophy or some make-believe trophy that they do play for. Iowa and Nebraska, they had a big pregame show on it. This is a monster game for Iowa, who found themselves in the college football playoff at number four last night on Tuesday. It's at Nebraska. This is, you know, another one where Nebraska's having a disappointing season. A win would get them bowl eligible, but there's more on the line for Iowa here.
Yeah, it's a dream season for the Iowa Hawkeye fans. I don't know any, but for the, at least in my life, the fictional Iowa fans out there that are in my head, I'm happy for you. It's not often that you have a season like this. You just come out of nowhere and you just keep rising up the rankings. You keep winning games. Nobody's quite sure exactly how good you are, but you just keep winning. And now you've got yourself in a position where you win this week, you win next week in the Big Ten title game. And what do you know? You're playing for a national title in the college football playoff. So,
it's pretty amazing. I think we all picked Iowa. We all picked Iowa as our playoff team out of the Big Ten. So,
yep, sure, definitely did.
We could go back and edit those picks. That's the great thing about having computers. We could go back and change them, and we'll see. Yep. Next up, we're going to talk about the game. It's Ohio State and Michigan. It kind of lost its luster when Ohio State laid an egg against Michigan State, and credit Michigan State. They played outstanding defense. They took care of the ball on offense with backup quarterbacks. And I think Grigson, the kicker, had a great kick at the end of the game and then had 22 arm windmills and was running around like a crazy man, like you should. But this game, you know, it's got some Big Ten title game implications. The bigger game comes later in Michigan State, Penn State, but the winner of this, if Michigan State does falter, would take the place of the East in the Big Ten title game in Indianapolis.
Yeah, it was surprising when the announcements, the assignments came out. This was given the dude slot on ABC while Michigan State, Penn State gets the 3:30, but that makes total sense.
Usually the Ohio State Michigan game is at noon when they play up at Michigan.
Oh, it is. Okay. Well.
Yeah.
So
it's nice to see some traditions last in college football.
Yeah. I think. Well, I'll spell out for those that aren't aware. I'll spell out the Big Ten title game scenarios. If Michigan State wins, they are the Big Ten East champion. They play Iowa in Indianapolis for the Big Ten title. If Michigan State loses to Penn State, then the winner of this game between Michigan and Ohio State would be the Big Ten East champion and play Iowa. So pretty straightforward, but all three teams are still alive. Michigan State in control of their own destiny. Michigan and Ohio State needing a loss by the Spartans. So that's interesting. I think the bigger thing really for these two schools, I really don't think that very many of their fans are expecting Michigan State to lose to Penn State. I think the bigger thing is this is the first matchup between Urban Meyer and Jim Harbaugh, and I think Ohio State fans are, let's just say they don't deal with losing very well.
That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there were, and I get it. Every fan base has nuts. I'm not saying that the majority of Ohio State fans were this angry about the game against Michigan State, but there were quite a few Ohio State, alleged Ohio State fans on their fan sites or on Twitter saying that Urban Meyer was an idiot and calling was just beyond atrocious, which, granted, I thought the play calling was incredibly confusing and really conservative, but they were really attacking Urban Meyer and his entire coaching staff and questioning their competence and wondering whether or not Ohio State would ever be great again. And I mean, just some ridiculous stuff that after one loss, but losing really brings out a lot of stink and winning covers it up. So
we'll see how they bounce back.
Exactly. The first adversity that this, they lost to Virginia Tech last year, but the first adversity that this group has faced in, 15, 16 months? I mean, and we saw after the game, Ezekiel Elliott declared he was going pro, which everybody knew was going to happen, but the timing of it was odd, and, complained about the lack of touches for himself, and Cardell Jones apparently announced he was going pro as well. I'm not entirely sure what he's done to show he's ready for that, but that's cool. It's going to be a very interesting game. Yes, the two head coaches are very interesting, and that's going to be a rivalry for as long as those two are around. That's going to draw national attention, but the stakes on the field are very real. Like you said, the Big Ten title's still out there. I think it's more likely that these two are battling for, bowl pecking order. The loser drops down another slot in the pecking order. The winner, goes up a slot in the pecking order. It's still very unclear how all that's going to shake out. Which Big Ten team's going to end up in the Rose Bowl depends largely on how the College Football Playoff Selection Committee makes its choices. And then, who goes to the Citrus Bowl, who goes to the Outback Bowl, all that, which I know a lot of people don't care about those games, but I get a real kick out of it.
It's
still a big deal to me and to a lot of fans. So there's a lot on the line in this game, more than just, the rivalry, but the rivalry itself is more than enough.
Yeah, definitely. And moving on, we'll go from Michigan, Ohio State to another barn burner of Rutgers, Maryland. We'll spend about five seconds on this game. It was actually a pretty good game last year. I think Maryland came out like gangbusters and Rutgers came back. But this game is probably a battle for who gets the better coach in the offseason. since I do believe nothing official has come out, but I do believe that Kyle Flood will be out at Rutgers. Randy Edsall is already out at Maryland. So that game's at noon on BTN, but you guys will be watching IU-Purdue. But if there's a commercial, you know, flip over and whatever.
Or
not watch at all and use that commercial time for bathroom break. Next up is probably a game everybody will be watching. It's Michigan State-Penn State at 3:30. It's on ESPN. We talked a little bit about this. The winner if Michigan State wins, they're in the Big Ten championship game and control their own destiny. I believe if they win that game against Iowa, they would be in the college football playoff. Again,
looks like it's
$20.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's $20 to get into that one. So if you're in the East Lansing area, you know, and you like football, it's going to be cold, but it's $20 to get in. So go ahead there. The biggest storyline is probably besides the Big Ten championship game is Connor Cook going to play? I've heard nothing. So it's a game that we'll have on in the press box, you know, while we're finishing up our bucket recap. And then we'll move on to the Axe game, Wisconsin and Minnesota. It's not as big as it was last year, where they were playing for a berth in the Big Ten title game. But it is still the oldest rivalry, I believe, in the FBS. And I heard that that Jerry Kill will be back at the stadium for Minnesota. So it's good to see him back. And maybe that rallies the troops to win the Axe for, I think, the first time in 11 years.
That you are correct. It is the longest ongoing rivalry in the FBS. These two teams have been playing each other 124 games. This will be game number 125. It's a really cool series. Two schools that, you know, and fan bases that really have a lot in common. They don't like each other, but I think that there's more respect in this rivalry than there is in the Ohio State Michigan one. A quick word on the Penn State Michigan State game. You know, something that I'm interested in seeing is whether or not Penn State is able to beat a quality opponent under James Franklin. It hasn't happened yet, and if they drop this game, you know, they finish 7-5 and really with no impressive wins. I mean, their most impressive win of the season, you have to search for it. You can't say IU because, you know, the Hoosiers didn't have Howard or Sudfeld. I mean, they haven't beaten anyone in the Big Ten with their winning record. So, and they didn't really beat anybody last year either. So it's interesting. They seem to beat the teams they're supposed to, and then you just kind of have to wonder whether or not they're making progress. I know they're recruiting well, but a loss here would, I think, definitely have some Penn State fans thinking throughout the off season about kind of where they stand in the Big Ten and whether or not they'll be able to move up the pecking order in this division. That we'll see. I don't know. That'll be an interesting one. But Wisconsin, Minnesota, yeah, I mean, Wisconsin, they're 8-3, so they're trying to get to 9 wins. They have a dreadful offense that if they scratch out another 10-win season with this offense, I don't know what to say. I mean, I don't know if they'll ever not win 10 games because it's hard to envision the offense being worse than it is this season for them. Minnesota, another team at 5-6, trying to get the bowl game.
Yeah, and finally, our final game to go over is Illinois versus Northwestern. They play for the Land of Lincoln Trophy. So, you know, we'll see. It's on ESPNU. That game is being played at Soldier Field. This is my big fear for college football rivalries is that they're going to have to move these games off campus in order to get people in the stands. They moved it to Chicago, just, you know, whatever, a short drive for Northwestern. A lot of Illinois alumni in the Chicagoland area, and we'll see. Northwestern is going for 10 wins this season. They're 9-2. It's amazing. It's really amazing that they've gotten to 10 wins. It's great for Fitz in that program. Illinois is sitting at 5-6. A win would push them to bowl eligibility, which would be quite the achievement for them after everything that's happened this season. Firing the coach a week before the season started, the AD getting fired mid-season, all these allegations. Kudos to Bill Cubitt. I don't know if he's going to get that job in the long run. He's a good enough coach, but can he build a program? Do they want to go into a different direction with a younger guy? Kudos to them. I do think Northwestern does win this, get to 10 wins. They're not the home team, but they have the short ride from Evanston. They don't have to stay. They'll stay in their normal hotel for home games probably, and there'll be a lot of Northwestern fans there as well.
Yeah, they claim to be Chicago's Big Ten team, so playing in Chicago should be pretty easy for them. I know Pat Fitzgerald came out and said something like, "We love that Illinois did this. It helps us stick to our normal routine and make sure we're always home for Thanksgiving." So. Clearly, Illinois doesn't mind conveniencing Northwestern, and it is a concern that more games will go this way, and that's too bad. It kind of washes out the atmosphere in a lot of cases. I agree. I think Northwestern probably is going to win this one and get 10 wins somehow. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how some of these Big Ten West teams like them and Wisconsin, how they do in a bowl game against a big opponent, maybe an SEC matchup or something like that. I'll be interested to see how that goes. That's one of the cool things about bowl season.
Yep. And TJ, time flies when you're having fun. We are out of time. We're talking Old Oak and Bucket. TJ, your primer came out this morning. It's a great read. It has all the information you need to know, where to find the game on TV, where to find it on the radio. TJ, thanks for joining us today, taking time out of your day job. Anyway, have a happy Thanksgiving and enjoy the last week of regular season college football.
Absolutely. Same to you. Have a good week, everyone.
All right. We're going to be signing off. Hoosier Nation, have a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy your time with your family. If you're going to the game on Saturday, tailgate, be loud, enjoy the atmosphere. This hasn't happened in 8 years now, a bucket game for a bowl for IU. Keep with Hoosier Huddle. We'll have lots of content coming out tomorrow and Friday in preparation for Saturday. The game is at noon. It's on Big Ten Network. If you're not going, watch it on TV. Stick with us and have a happy Thanksgiving.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I want to tell you a story. It's a story about a scandal, broken relationships, gossip, rumors, money, corporate rivalry, and a broom. A performance-enhancing broom. My name is John Cullen. I'm a comedian, podcaster, and for 20 years, I was a semi-professional curler. And I want to tell you the story about how a single broom almost imploded the 500-year-old sport of curling.
We felt like we were bringing a knife to a gunfight.
It's the story of a superstar and his fall from grace.
Well, I was being dragged through the mud.
It's the story of two brother entrepreneurs with a dream.
I said, that's great news.
It's a story of intrigue.
I still don't understand why we want to keep his name secret.
The full story has never been told, so I'm going to tell it. Broomgate, how a broom almost killed curling.
It was a year I'd like to forget.
To listen to Broomgate, search for Broomgate in your favorite podcast app. That's all one word, Broomgate.
The NBA Finals are heating up. Looking for hot takes on all the postseason action? The Old Man and the Three, presented by BMW, is the podcast to listen to for the ultimate finals coverage. Host and former NBA sharpshooter J.J. Redick not only has a plugged-in perspective on the action from his time in the league, but he's also announcing the games in real time for ESPN. J.J. has the ultimate insider point of view, and he's taking you along for the ride as he breaks down the best defensive schemes, dunks, and drives from each game. And speaking of incredible drives, there's no better place to tune into your new favorite podcast, The Old Man and the Three, than in a standard-setting BMW. Luxury meets power to create a wholly new driving experience. Push the limits this NBA season with the brand that set the ultimate standard. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.